Vaishnavam Adarshanam Amritam Kuva Yatayatam So Apananatas to Sevana Praha Krishna Sankhita Okay, cartels. Good to be here. It's like a full house today. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Beha Guri
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Beha Guri
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Beha Jana Randa Gunjan, Raja Jana Ranjana Paramahansa Paravidakacharya also Tera Satishi Shimad, His Divine Grace of Ayachadanada Bhaktivananda Gosami Mashila Prabhupad Kijai Anantakoti Voishna Vrindikajai Namacharya Shidahuidas Thakur Kijai Param Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shidwaita Gadadha, Shivasati Gaur, Bhaktivinanda Gajaya. Shri Shri Radhakrishna, Gopagopata Sayam Kun Radhakunda, Giri Govardhan Kijaya, Vrindavadam Kijaya, Maturadam Kijaya, Navaditam Kijaya, Jagadavasami Kijaya, Yamadamaya Kijaya. Shrimati Galasi Dev Kijaya, Samaveda Bhakta, Vrinda Kijaya, Gaur, Premananda Hari Hari. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 3rd chapter, text 33. So. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Yaktam, Vibho Stuta
Idam
Shariram Ayenendriha Prana Mano Gunams Thvam Vongshe Stito Dhamani Parameshche Avyakta Atma Purushaha Puranaha Avyaktam Vibhostulam Hiram Shariram Yenendriya Pranamano Gunam Stvam Shastito Dhamani Parameshje Avyakta Atma Purusha Puranaha Avyaktam Vibhostu Lamitam Shariram
Avyaktam Vibhostu Lamitam Shariram
Yenendriya Pranamano Gunam Stvam
Yenendriya Pranamano
Gunam Stvam Vongshestito Dhamani Parameshje
Vongshestito Dhamani Parameshje
Avyakta Atma Purusha Puranaha Yatam vibhostulam itam shariram
Yatam vibhostulam itam shariram
Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam
Yenendriya pranamano gunam
stvam Vongshestito dhamani parameshje
Vongshestito dhamani parameshje
Avyakta atma purusha puranaha
Yeah.
Vyaktam.
Vyaktam.
Manifested.
Manifested.
Vivo.
Vivo.
O my Lord.
O my Lord.
Stulam.
Stulam.
Cosmic manifestation.
Cosmic manifestation.
Idam.
Idam.
This.
This.
Shariram.
Shariram.
External body.
External body.
Yena.
Yena.
By which?
By which?
Indriya.
Indriya.
The senses.
Prana.
Prana.
The life air.
Manaha.
Manaha.
The mind.
Manaha.
Gunan.
Gunan.
Transcendental qualities.
Transcendental qualities.
Tuam. You.
You.
Bungshe.
Bungshe.
Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Stitaha.
Situated.
Dhamani. In your own abode. Paramesche. The supreme. Avyakta.
Not
manifested through ordinary knowledge.
Atma.
The soul.
Purushaha.
The supreme person.
Puranaha.
The oldest. So, translation. O my Lord, being changelessly situated in your own abode, you expand your universal form within this cosmic manifestation, thus appearing to taste the material world. You are Brahman, the Supersoul, the oldest, the personality of Godhead. So you can repeat. O my Lord,
being changelessly situated
in your own abode,
you expand your universal form
within this cosmic manifestation,
thus appearing to taste the material world.
You are Brahman,
the Supersoul,
the oldest,
the personality of Godhead.
So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is said that the Absolute Truth appears in three features, namely impersonal Brahman, localized Supersoul, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The cosmic manifestation is the gross material body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enjoys the taste of material mellows by expanding His parts and parcels, the living entities, who are qualitatively one with Him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is situated in the Vaikuntha planets, where He enjoys the spiritual mellows. Therefore, the One Absolute Truth, Bhagavan, pervades all by His material cosmic manifestation, the Supreme Brahman, the spiritual Brahman effulgence, and His personal existence as the Supreme Board. So, Vyaktam Vivo Stulam Midam Shridevaram Yanendriya Pranamano Gadam Stom Pungshe Stito Dhamani Paramesche Avyakta Atma Purusha Purana. So, Omagana Tivadandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there's something a little bewildering in this purport, and also in the verse, about the Lord appearing to taste the material world, and also Prabhupada says in the purport here, that the personality of God who enjoys the taste of the material mellows. So let's describe what mellows are. You know, mellows means basically the taste of a particular relationship. Mellow is a taste, for lack of a better word. Just like you have different tastes within this material world of food, you know, sour, bitter. Whoops. I guess the demigods didn't like that one. So sour, bitter, sweet, pungent. You know, you have all these different tastes, and also in the spiritual realm, we have the different tastes. There's actually 12 different tastes, which is interesting, which we'll describe in a few minutes. So, in the material world, the living entities are Let's say experiencing a taste that is described by Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, like the taste that a camel experiences when the camel is chewing on thorns. Prabhupada used this example because he was able to observe the camels chewing on thorns, and they enjoy very much the taste of their blood. So in other words, the taste of the material world is a very bitter taste, a nasty bitter taste, and ultimately, you know, what appears to be like happiness in the beginning or nectar in the beginning is like a poison at the end in the material world. So how is it that it's described that Krishna enjoys what Prabhupada says, the taste of the material mellows? But actually, if we read the whole sentence, by expanding his parts and parcels. So we are parts and parcels of Krishna. That means we're of the same nature of Krishna. So indirectly, you can say that Krishna enjoys those material mellows. But in another sense, too, you can see that Krishna is observing the living entity as the supersoul in everyone's heart and enjoying the material world in the sense that the material world is actually rectifying the conditioned soul, the conditioned soul can come back to him. Because that's the purpose of the material world. I mean, there's a whole branch of philosophy called teleology, which is the study of purposes. You know, teleological means the study of purposes. So, oftentimes, when people deal with the material world, they confuse two different words. That is the word that refers to purposes, which is the why word, and the word that refers to the technological, let's say, how something happens. You know, this how and why are two different words. And oftentimes, people use these words interchangeably. I mean, for example, the typical question a little boy asks his father or mother is, you know, why is the sky blue? And the answer often is given because of the refraction of the light, the sunlight coming through the atmosphere, therefore the sky appears to be blue. But that's not really why the sky is blue. It's how the sky is blue. Does everyone understand the distinction? It describes the mechanical or material process by which the sky is blue. But actually, the Vedas describe why the sky is blue. Does anyone know why the sky is blue? It's Krishna's reflection of Krishna's form, color. That's why it is. So we can say, so the scientists, they confuse these two words. And they often say, there is no purpose. Everything comes about by chance. Of course, the Gita describes this as a demoniac mentality. Everything happens by the laws of probability, the laws of chance, or whatever. But there is a purpose behind everything. And the purpose behind the material world is to rectify us so that we can go back home, back to Godhead, to Krishna, realize that our real situation is only to be with Krishna. So that's one way the Lord enjoys the material world. However, the Lord also can enjoy the material world by coming down to execute his pastimes and to enjoy what we call the indirect rasas. You know, we have five direct rasas. And those five direct rasas, I think most of you know, the peaceful shanta ras, where people just worship God in a mood of awe and reverence. And then there's a dasha ras, where you serve God. Vatsalya ras, where you become, Sakya ras, where you become the friend of God. Vatsalya ras, where you become the parent of God in that mood. And ultimately, the Madhurya Ras, where you become the conjugal lover of God, or assist in the conjugal loving affairs. So, these rasas are sometimes compared to different vegetables. It's interesting. Like, each and every vegetable has a specific taste to it. You know, you have broccoli, and yesterday they gave us some very nice fruit, sapote, chocolate fruit or something like that. Chocolate pudding fruit. It was very nice. So, but sometimes what people do, or oftentimes what people do with vegetables, is they add spices, right? Because if you just take vegetables without spices, it's not as interesting as vegetables with, as they say in India, garam masala. That means a hot mixture of spices, hot spices. So, in the same way, Krishna very much enjoys mixing these direct rasas, and the devotees enjoy very much mixing these direct spiritual rasas we're talking about right now, not the material rasas. Of course, the material rasas are a reflection of the spiritual rasas, as we see in the 15th chapter of the Gita, where the material world is described as a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, like the banyan tree with its roots up and branches down. So, but in the spiritual rasas, Krishna enjoys mixing the five direct rasas with the indirect rasas, the seven indirect rasas. And many of these seven indirect rasas can't be fully manifested in the spiritual world. So Krishna comes down to the material world to exhibit specific pastimes that are not there in the spiritual world. I mean, for example, in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't have the birth pastime, you know, where he's born. And he's 10 years and a little baby. And of course, the demons aren't there in the spiritual world. And certainly there's no killing. Just like one of the indirect rasas is ghastliness. And ghastliness, I think you all know what ghastliness means. I mean, it's a combination of something being so disgusting you just want to scream in agony. Ghastly. Like sometimes it's described in the different pastimes that there are so many people being killed in a particular battle that there are rivers of blood and the heads are floating on the rivers of blood. And that's pretty ghastly, isn't it? I mean, if you see that, I mean, one time I went to the doctor and had blood taken out, and I looked at my blood and I fainted. Just one time. And now when they have my blood taken out, I don't look at it. So, I just chant Hare Krishna in my mind. So you can imagine a whole river of heads, you know, blood river of heads, or you have Parashuram. Everybody knows who Parashuram is. He's the warrior incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he killed the Kshatriyas like 21 times. And he created lakes of blood. It's amazing. And so these are all pastimes of the Lord. Because you may say, you know, why does Krishna come down and do these things? You know, the why question again. And actually, he doesn't have to come down to do those things, as Srila Prabhupada explains, that the killing of the demons, you know, the stuff we read about in the Gita, Paritranaya, Sadhanam, Vinashayat, Shadushkritam, that killing the demons and helping the devotees, establishing religious principles, can all be done by Krishna's either devotees or material energy. I mean, Durga is certainly extremely capable of taking care of all the rascals. If she rides on a trident, carrying a trident, which is the threefold miseries, adhyatmik, adhibodhik, and adhidaivik, miseries from the body and mind, miseries from other living entities, and miseries from the material nature. So Krishna doesn't have to come down, but he enjoys these particular exchanges, which is quite interesting. So there's rivers of blood, there's lakes of blood, and also devotees sometimes exhibit this symptom of ghastliness, because we're going to talk about the indirect rasas, which are really interesting. And Nectar Devotion talks about these extensively. So, for example, there's the case of Shripad Yamunacharya, who's a great pure devotee of the Lord. And he manifested this mood of ghastliness when he talked about whenever I think of, you know, illicit life, illicit sex life, I simply want to spit. And I remember when Prabhupada was reciting this particular verse, he actually spat. You know, Prabhupada was saying whenever I think, reciting Shripad Yamunacharya's verse, he just went, poof, like that. So that's... that's like ghastliness, you know, yuck, the material world, which is interesting. Why does a devotee, let me just go a little further, why would a devotee do that? Does it mean he's attracted to these things? I mean, generally you find when there's a repulsion for material sense objects, it means one's attracted to it. Because like sometimes you have like really young brahmacharis who just say, the ladies. ever hear that? It was interesting how in ISKCON they refer, the men are all masters and the women are all mothers. So, you know, Prabhus and mothers. Yes, mothers could be in the back of the temple room, and the Prabhus should be up front, you know. And so, anyway, so that's just attraction to, that's just attraction to sense objects, you know, like Prabhupada gave the example of the sannyasi who helped a lady cross a river, and the other sannyasi who was actually negative about it, you know, just the whole time they were walking. This other sannyasi was just grumbling under his breath, why did you help this lady cross the river? And basically the sannyasi who helped the lady cross the river said, actually I helped her cross the river, but you've been carrying her all these kilometers. Because, you know, that's a negativity. Negativity towards something means you're attracted to it. However, so why would Sripada Yamunacharya be so negative towards, you know, sense gratifications, especially, you know, sex life? The reason being is that a devotee understands these things take him away from Krishna. So we're not negative per se towards aspects of the material energy if you're actually detached. You're negative in a way because it keeps you from thinking of Krishna. Just like a devotee thinks about sleep. You know, Prabhupada said sleep is a waste of time. Of course, you need to sleep a little bit or else not only are you going to be, spaced out during the day, but you probably kill yourself while driving a car. I told the devotees, like in the early days of the movement, they wouldn't let us sleep more than 5 hours a night. And that meant that generally you had to take your naps while you were driving. And some people kill themselves as a result of that. Of course, I developed the skill of taking my naps when I was stopping at a red light. And whenever you were taking the Sankirtan party out, you'd notice in the back of the van, everyone would be sleeping. 100%. And also there was the story, Prabhupada was on the airplane. And he was looking around at all the devotees, and all the devotees were sleeping in the whole plane. And Prabhupada said, everybody else is awake. Why are the devotees sleeping? So, anyway, so it's not that we should be negative towards sleep, but understand that certain things may keep us away from Krishna if we accept too much of them in this material world. So therefore, a devotee is not supposed to accept more than necessary. More than necessary is different for every individual. Everybody has his particular quota, according to the Isopanishad. Someone may need a warm shower and someone else may need a cold shower. Of course, in the beginning days of the movement, everybody took cold showers because we didn't have the money to pay for the hot water. So, so that's ghastliness. I didn't want to spend so much time on ghastliness. But there's other indirect rasas that are quite interesting. That some of them become more fully expressed in the material world, and some of them are fully expressed in the spiritual realm. I mean, for example, another one is bhayanaka. Bhayanaka means fear. In the spiritual realm, there's a certain amount of fear, but there's only rumors of demons, or sometimes, according to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, devotees may even play the parts of demons, but there's no actual demons in the spiritual world. But in the material world, there's actual demons. So you have the case where Mother Yashoda is experiencing extreme fear when she sees Krishna in the Kaliya lake. Krishna is dove into the lake because the Kaliya serpent is there. And she's experiencing extreme fear, and all the residents are experiencing extreme fear, and they're fainting out of extreme fear. And Krishna enjoys that. Krishna enjoys sometimes seeing his devotees fearful. It's very tasty for him because it's an expression of their love. Not that Krishna just wants to make you scared, but it's an expression of the love. See, there's different. These are all different expressions of love of Krishna. Try to understand that. All different expressions of love of Krishna. Even like humor. For example, like humor, there's some stories in Nectar of Devotion. Nectar of Devotion is such a wonderful book. How One time a devotee said to Krishna, just open your mouth and I'll give you some prasadam, and then he threw a flower into Krishna's mouth. And the devotees were laughing at the whole thing. And then Krishna himself, that's where Krishna is the object of the humor. And then sometimes Krishna himself is very humorous, like when he said to Jatila, Jatila of course is the sister-in-law of Srimati Radharani, and Radharani's so-called husband is Abhimanyu. He says, you have a nose like a frog. Can you imagine saying that to a lady? You have a nose like a frog, and your eyes are so beautiful, they're like dog's eyes. Krishna's such an interesting god, isn't he? He's not a boring guy. Anyways, he said some other things about parts of their bodies, which I'm not going to mention because I'm a sannyasi. But anyway, so Krishna sometimes is the object of humor, like in the flower example, and sometimes he's the person who is humorous, the subject who's doing the humor. And then other indirect rasas, another one is called Adbhuta. Adbhuta means shock. So an example of Adbhuta would be when Lord Brahma, after he stole the coward boys and the calves, and he went away for a little while, which is a year on the earth planet, and he came back and he saw them still there. So he had a shock. So Krishna enjoyed making him shocked. It's Krishna's, if you think about it, Krishna's like a little kid who likes to tease his parents sometimes. You know, enjoys, you know, sometimes you like to make your mother or father angry at you. Isn't that Nimai? You enjoy getting them upset. Or you like to make them laugh sometimes. So Krishna's in this youthful mood. Try to understand the nature of Krishna. He's always having fun. I mean, the definition or the reason, let's say the why of Krishna does anything is because to have fun. People can ask, you know, why does Krishna play a flute? Because he likes it. He has fun. Why does Krishna have a peacock feather? Because he likes it. That's why we call Krishna the cause of all causes. Because there's no other cause for why he does or does something or acts a certain way. For us, there's a lot of causes. It's called psychology. You know, why do we like to eat this type of food? Well, when I was young, my mother fed it to me. Why don't you like to eat this type of food? Well, when I was young, my mother forced me to eat it. Just like the devotees know that, many devotees know I don't eat beetroot. Because when I was young, my mother forced me to eat beetroot soup. And even if I hear the name, I start to feel angry. So, you know, you can trace out all your mental proclivities to psychology. You know, that's why the psychologists ask you, you know, what was your childhood like? Was your mother nice to you? And you can see it. And not only childhood, but your previous childhood. And that's reincarnation, as we believe in. Like, if you have a phobia, a particular fear, let's say, of heights, that means probably you jumped off a cliff in your last life, some lover's leap with your girlfriend, and you died. So you're afraid of heights in this life. So Krishna's psychology is not exactly like that. Everything he does is because he enjoys it. There's no psychological, analytical, Freudian analysis for Krishna's psychology. I'm not going to tell you what Freudian is. But, so anyway, so Krishna really enjoys these things. So another example of Adbhuta, or just like bewilderment or shock, would be when Narada Muni came to Dwarka, and he saw all of Krishna's different palaces, 16,108 palaces. Krishna has 16,108 wives. And Krishna was doing something different in each and every palace. That's shocking, isn't it? One place he was playing with his friends, another place talking to his wife, another place he was planning out his day. And it was the same Krishna. I mean, that's amazing. Even when I hear about Krishna being married to 16,108 wives, it's just like, I can't conceive of it. It's inconceivable. Actually, Prabhupada said in Kali Yuga, when one has one wife, and they will take care of it. He's a great hero. So you have Krishna with 16,000. Actually, there was someone else in the Vedic literatures with 10 million wives. Did you know that? Does anyone remember who that was? Chitraketu. And only one kid. And Krishna had 10 sons and some daughters with each and every wife. And you could multiply that, you know, 16,108 times 10 is 160. Wow. It's a lot of kids. And the grandchildren, each of those had 10, you know, so big family. So it's inconceivable. That's Adbhuta. So also we can approach Krishna this way, you know, understanding these indirect rasas and just, it's, you know, we laugh sometimes at Krishna's pastimes. We feel shocked by hearing certain things in Krishna's pastimes. So we can also experience these things and they attract us to Krishna, help us understand his personality. Another indirect rasa is called chivalry, or the Sanskrit word is vira. Vira actually means heroism. But, you know, a hero is chivalrous. I mean, Prabhupada, one funny thing is Prabhupada would actually pronounce this word vira as vir, because Prabhupada's Bengalicized pronunciation of Sanskrit, he changed the V's into B's. So people sometimes ask me what my name means, because Prabhupada said it, Bir Krishna, like that. And jokingly I said, well, it refers to an alcoholic beverage. But actually, Prabhupada meant, you know, Krishna who is chivalrous and heroic. Chivalrous and heroic. So that's another indirect rasa. And it's very interesting, in the Nectar Devotion it describes that Krishna likes this sort of chivalrous activity, heroic activity, that sometimes he even fought with Arjuna. You don't usually think that Krishna would be fighting with his friend, but he was, you know, play wrestling with Arjuna. And Arjuna, at the same time, it's described that Draupadi was watching the whole thing and enjoying the fight. It's interesting, isn't it? If you think of Krishna's pastimes, it's very, very interesting. So, another indirect rasa would be like Karuna. Karuna is sometimes understood as compassion, but it's actually concern. Also, when Yashoda Maya sees Krishna in danger, Krishna is the object of compassion, object of concern. I mean, many times we're the object of compassion. I mean, that's why Krishna comes down to the material world. It's been described before. He doesn't come down simply parichanaya sadhanam vinashaya shadushkutam. He comes down to exhibit, as Prabhupada said, his pastimes in this world so that we won't just speculate upon the nature of God. Prabhupada mentions this in the Krishna book, in the beginning of the Krishna book, that otherwise people would just like speculate or apply what we call the anthropological understanding, anthropomorphous, which means they would project their own understanding of God. As one pre-Socratic philosopher said, you know, if Ethiopians had God, he would look have a certain color. If horses had God, God would look like a horse. That's anthropomorphic. And sometimes people accuse us of being anthropomorphic, because they say, well, how you say God has two hands, you know, plays a flute? That's because you like music and you have two hands. And, you know, the reason God is depicted, they accuse us, the reason God is depicted as having a color like a fresh cloud is because that's from India and people generally look like that. So therefore you're projecting your understanding. So that's an accusation. So had not Krishna appeared to exhibit his particular pastimes and form and qualities, then everything would be based on this speculative theory, these speculative theories. So that's another important reason Krishna appears, to attract us so we can understand his real nature. And when we understand his real nature, we give up our attraction for this material realm. So Krishna, talking about the Karuna, so Krishna becomes the object of compassion, and sometimes he is exhibiting compassion towards the conditioned souls, especially as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This particular manifestation of the indirect rasa reaches its perfection when Lord Chaitanya is Namaho, Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Padayate, Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauri Tusenama. So he is the most munificent because he is giving out something pure, the highest thing, freely to everyone. So that's Karuna. And another one is another indirect rasa that's fully exhibited in the material world is Rodra, or anger. You think, how can Krishna enjoy anger? But he enjoys, especially, I'll tell you a few stories about this, some of them from Nectar Devotion. One is that one time Krishna was wearing a necklace that Radharani had given him, and he got Jatila really angry at him. Another time, what he especially enjoys is getting Radharani angry at him. And this, of course, is her anger towards him. Even there's this place in Vrindavan called the Manasarovara, the Lake of Anger, in which Krishna is depicted as bowing down and begging Radharani for forgiveness. It's really interesting. There's a nice temple there, and even the trees are bowing down in deference to Srimati Radharani. So I'll tell a story about this. It's an interesting story. Once upon a time, Krishna really wanted to make Radharani angry. Not only once upon a time, many, many upon a time. Krishna. So what he does is he sometimes tells her how beautiful she is by comparing her face to the moon. And of course, the name of Radharani's competitor is Chandravali. It's not Chandravali, it's Chandravali is the right pronunciation. So he says, oh, your face is just like Chandravali. Oh, and then he stops there and he says, excuse me, I made a mistake. So anyway, something like that. And then she gets really angry at him. And sometimes, actually, she posts her associates like Lalita with sticks to beat Krishna if he ever tries to come near. And Krishna enjoys it so much. This one particular pastime is the Gauri Kund pastime, where Krishna enjoys it so much that he has to put on a disguise to placate her later on to be with her. So in this particular pastime, she went to Gauri Kund, which is the Kund of the goddess Gauri Durga, and Krishna, in order to pacify her, put on some deity clothes and dressed as a woman. Dressed just like Gauri. I mean, he took on the deity's jewelry and everything like that, and like the deity's earrings. And so, I guess in the West that's called drag. Is that right? I guess that's what. Like, you have a perverted reflection of that in the Western world, where men dress up as women. Does that happen sometimes in nightclubs? Yeah. They're called drag queens or something. So anyway, and people pay money to see them. That's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, why not see a regular lady? Why see a man dressed up as a lady? So anyway, so getting back to the point. So Krishna dresses up as this just like a deity, and he goes into the Gauri Kund area, and Radharani is introduced to him, and basically she is. She embraces him, not knowing, you know, just thinks that Krishna is one of her friends. And then she realizes it's Krishna. Then what happens is, because they're in the temple, they're discovered by Abhimanyu and Jatila, which is Radharani's so-called husband, Radharani's so-called mother-in-law. And Radharani faints because, this is another point, you know, that, like fear, another indirect rasa. Like fear. So she faints, feeling great anxiety, because finally she's been discovered by her mother-in-law and sister-in-law and her so-called husband with Krishna. And she faints in such a way that she's offering dandavats to Krishna. But then the mother-in-law and sister-in-law and her so-called husband think that she's offering dandavats to the deity that has come out of the deity form, to Gauri. So they think that Krishna's Gauri. And Radharani is offering obeisances, and then the deity Gauri starts to speak, and Krishna as the deity Gauri. I mean, it's so humorous too, these pastimes. Krishna is the deity Gauri, says to Abhimanyu, who was thinking of sending Radharani away out of Vrindavan so that she'd be safe from the clutches of that Krishna, the deity says, Abhimanyu, you're meant to die pretty soon. Kamsa is coming to get you and he's going to kill you. And because you've committed a great offense, not trusting your wife, who's the most chaste person, and Abhimanyu begins to apologize, and the deity says, no, you can't be forgiven. And then Radharani comes back to consciousness, understanding the whole trick that Krishna is doing, and she begs the deity, who is actually Krishna, please forgive my husband, please forgive him. And then finally Krishna, as the deity, says, yes, I forgive him, but he should never distrust you again. He should never try to send you away again. And then Abhimanyu apologizes, leaves the scene, and then there's Krishna and Radharani together. So, it's an interesting story. That story is told several times by the Acharyas. So the point, anyway, that's an extreme instance of anger. So anger is exhibited sometimes, too, in Krishna's pastimes. And let's see, the only one we actually spoke about all of them so far. Ghastliness and everything like that. So Krishna comes down to the material world to experience some of these different indirect rasas in a higher degree than that could be exhibited in the spiritual realm. Of course, then the question naturally people ask is that then Krishna wants to fill the material world with us conditioned souls so we can enjoy and have us suffer and have his pastimes here? No. That's not a fact. Krishna can have his devotees come down sometimes to the material world to exhibit these pastimes, like you see the cursing of the Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha story. And also the material world will always be filled with us nice conditioned souls. Why will the material world always be filled? Because there will always be conditioned souls who want to avoid Krishna Bhavya Mukta and their face away from Krishna. So what do we do about all this? We meditate on these different pastimes of Krishna in the material world, and by doing so, understanding his enjoying these particular activities, we can become liberated and ultimately either go back to the spiritual world or assist Krishna's pastimes in this world. So any questions or comments about any of these things? He says class ends at 8:15. I've gone on too long. So questions, comments about any of the points about Krishna enjoying in the material world or enjoying indirect rasas. Yes?
I just heard you say the so-called husband. What do you mean by that?
Well, okay. I guess I should explain that. Well, in the Boma Vrindavan pastimes, that means the pastimes on the earth planet, then Krishna is not married to Radharani. There are certain, let's say, marriages that take place in secret. Like there's one place called Gantoligram in Vrindavan where there's a secret marriage of Radha and Krishna. They tie in the cloth of Radharani to Krishna. But actually, there's an exhibition of a so-called marriage where Radharani marries this other person called Abhimanyu, who is a expansion of Krishna. But this Abhimanyu, he never comes close to Radharani, even when he wants to. I mean, there's one pastime told by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur when Abhimanyu was given a whole case of jewels to bring to Radharani, but Yashodamayi gave Abhimanyu a whole case of jewels to bring to Radharani so that she'd be favorable to him. But what had happened is that Krishna had taken all the jewels out of that case and put himself in instead. So when Abhimanyu brought that case to his wife, and he said to his wife, please decorate yourself with whatever is in the case, she followed his instructions very thoroughly and decorated herself with Krishna. But the point is that Abhimanyu is there to spice up the pastime, his service. He's a devotee. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he's a demon or anything like that. He's a devotee, and his service is to spice up the pastime of Radha and Krishna, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Just like we're talking about different vegetables that without spices wouldn't be so tasty. So these indirect rasas that are being exhibited spice up the direct rasas. Because if you don't have the indirect rasas, let's say the married, if you had Krishna married to Radharani, nothing ever happened. everything was pleasant, and they lived happily ever after. I mean, most of the times you read these nursery stories or whatever, fairy tales, where they say Prince Charming and Princess, whatever her name is, lived happily ever after. And they never tell you what happened because it's so boring. You know, because who was going to read about that? They send their kids to school, the kids grew up and they became doctors. It's boring. You know, what's really enticing is, you know, the romance, you know, like the story of Cinderella and everything like that. That's interesting. But after Cinderella marries Prince Charming, who the hell cares about this story? So isn't it? I mean, there are any, like, after tales, like she starts nagging Prince Charming, you know, you never hear about that. But, you know, or you know, your Bollywood movies, those of you from India, not many people here from India, you know, there's romance, and then there's someone who interferes with the romance, you know, there's the protagonist, the antagonist. I mean, if you study plays, you know there has to be protagonist, antagonist, a foil there. And it, like in Krishna's pastimes, you know, the foil is like Madhu Mangal. You know, like there's a story about Madhu Mangal Krishna came back real late one day from pasturing the cows, and Mother Yashoda says, why are you late? And Madhu Mangal says, well, he was just looking at the girls. And Krishna says, shut up. You're causing me problems. So in the same way, so that's his service, to be so humorous like that, you know. And there's many stories about Madhu Mangal being humorous, how he can't escape when he's stealing the butter with Krishna because his rear end is too big to fit out the window. But I'm not going to tell that story. So the same thing with Abhimanyu. He's serving Krishna by being apparently married to Srimati Radharani. And that's the antagonist right there. You know, protagonist is Krishna, antagonist is Abhimanyu. But really, he has no relationship with Radharani. It's just done as a play act to spice up Krishna's pastime. So therefore, he's called, by the acharyas, he's called the so-called husband of Radharani. I mean, there was a marriage, yes. But still, you know, if you have a husband who never comes within 100 meters of his wife, then it's a so-called husband, right? And so-called mother-in-law and so-called sister-in-law. Anyway, so this is that it? Explain everything? I mean, that's why it's called so-called. Because Krishna, I mean, in one sense, Krishna's eternally married to Srimati Radharani, but they have these pastimes, these what's called parakiya bhav, which are hard sometimes for people to understand. Because the parakiya, or the unmarried pastimes in this world, are actually the lowest. But in the spiritual realm, they're the highest, because this realm is a perverted reflection of the spiritual realm. And so Krishna enjoys that. I mean, he's always playing his flute with his girlfriends. Not with his wife. Krishna... Poor wife of Krishna. Anyway, so Krishna doesn't play his flute outside of Vrindavan. I mean, sometimes you see some of these Hindi movies, they show Krishna playing his flute outside of Vrindavan. It doesn't happen. Krishna has, in Vrindavan, there's special qualities that are only exhibited in Vrindavan and nowhere else, like unexcelled beauty, intimate pastimes with his devotees, you know, intimate devotees, plays the flute, like that. What can I say, you know, so... And some of these rasas only become expressed to their highest degree in the Vrindavan pastimes. And some of these pastimes only occur in the material realm. And so there's certain things that Krishna does in this world. Anyway, and they're all relishable. So those are pastimes. But Krishna directly doesn't enjoy the material taste. The principle is that Krishna is the most renounced. It's one of the qualities of Bhagavan. He's the most renounced person. He owns the whole world. Isn't it? But he hasn't come to enjoy anything. I mean, if we owned a lot, we'd be attempting to enjoy it, right? But Krishna doesn't care. a whit about any material enjoyment. Just like when he's dancing with the gopis, there's no question of material enjoyment. It's an exchange of love with his most dear devotees. It's not that, you know, Krishna wants to enjoy mundane sex life. There's nothing like that. But people, sahajas, they project that in their own conceptions upon the realm of the absolute and think that Krishna's enjoying some mundane exchange. He doesn't. Although the symptoms are similar. You know, in Krishna's pastimes, you know, there's kissing and everything like that. But in essence, it's not that Krishna's enjoying material, he's enjoying loving exchanges with his devotees. That's what Krishna enjoys. He enjoys relationships. That's the taste. You know, you talk about taste. All of these particular rasas, direct and indirect rasas, are all tastes of relationships with living entities. Krishna does not enjoy a relationship with this dull matter. It's not like me that I enjoy my relationship with this phone. You know, there is no relationship, but I'm thinking there's a relationship. You know, just like I was just talking to one of my good friends and disciples, and he had just gotten the latest iPhone 6, and he was enjoying the relationship with it, showing it off, you know, look at it. And then, you know, I wasn't experiencing envy because I have an Android phone. You know, I said, my phone is better than yours. So, you know, what a perverted Russ, isn't it? My phone is better than yours. Whereas Krishna's, everything in the spiritual world is conscious. When Krishna eats a sweet ball, the sweet ball is a person. So it's all relationship based. You understand? It's relationship based. Person-to-person based. Nothing is dull matter. This we should understand about this spiritual realm. Everything Krishna does is related. His flute is a person. It's not that Krishna picks up some metal flute. Of course, it's bamboo, actually. And even the trees from which the bamboo flute were made are very happy that Krishna, their child, is taking the nectar of Krishna's lips. And the gopis are envious. They're criticizing the flute. Sometimes they attempt to steal the flute. There's the one story when they stole the flute and Jatila caught them and she took the flute from them. And then they were wondering how to get it back. They called for Vrinda. Vrinda called for her one of her old monkey, lady monkeys, Kakati. And this lady monkey went into Jatila's house, tore up everything in Jatila's house. Jatila was trying to get rid of it, throwing everything she could find at the monkey. Finally, the only thing she had to throw at the monkey was the flute. The monkey grabbed the flute, brought it back to Vrinda. So, but these are all persons. The monkey is a person, the flute's a person, Jatila is a person, Kutila is a person, Abhimanyu is a person, the house is a person. That's hard to understand. Krishna's shoes are persons. Of course, when Krishna goes out to pasture the cows, he doesn't wear shoes because the cows don't wear shoes either. So, you know, everything about Krishna is persons. Krishna's clothes are expansions of Balaram. So it's all just like personal exchange. Everything Krishna does is relationship, personal exchange, rasa. Is that clear? Even Krishna's creating the material world is out of his compassion. Krishna never comes in contact with matter. It's only Lord Shiva, who is described in the Brahma Samhita, Saikshita, the glance of Krishna, who is called Shambhu. Brahma Samhita says the glance of Krishna is called Shambhu, who consorts with Maya, the material energy. I know it's a little philosophy. But you know, it's exciting for me to understand whatever Krishna does, he's interacting with persons. It's, you know, it's very sweet because it's very personal. There's nothing impersonal. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
You mentioned that the Lord creates us, his partial, we're part and parcel.
We're expansions of his, yeah.
And for his pleasure.
Yeah.
Somebody was asking me, why do we have to be? I mean, okay, we're in this spiritual world, we fall down, we're here, and why? What for? What's the purpose today?
The purpose is for His pleasure and our pleasure. You know, He's compassionate to us, so we can enjoy in that way. And He enjoys loving exchanges. Of course, He's satisfied without us. I mean, He doesn't need, at least, He doesn't need me, that's for sure. But He's hankering. See, the love of Krishna is causeless, just like everything else about Krishna is causeless. Our love in this material world has a cause. You know, we love someone because they're attractive, pretty, handsome, strong, whatever. But Krishna loves us just because He wants us to be happy. I mean, Krishna doesn't gain anything from us. So there's the story in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita where Krishna is waiting in anxiety for Gopakumara to come back to Him, and even becomes His own guru. So, and Krishna is so happy to see Gopakumara back that He faints in ecstasy upon embracing him in the spiritual realm. And that's love. I mean, Krishna doesn't need anything. As they say, you know, what can you give the man who has everything? You can't give him anything, but you can give him love. And that's what Krishna is hankering for. So Krishna manifests pure love towards the jivas. It's amazing. I mean, practically no one in this world except for pure devotees can love us purely without any expectation of anything for themselves, any selfish motive. All the love in this world, you know, I love my dog. Of course, I don't have a dog. But anyway, I'm just speaking in teaching sense that, you know, let's say I love my dog. Why? Because my dog is obsequious. Obsequious is a fancy word that means he always wants to please me. You know, the dogs come up and they just go, whatever you want, master. They carry your shoes. And, you know, men would like to have a wife like that. Whatever you want, master. What is that? What is that funny joke that I don't know if I should tell it? You know, anyway, I'll tell it anyway. People get married, and the man is hoping his wife won't change, but she changes, and the woman is hoping that the man will change, and he doesn't change. Think about that for a second. Anyway, so that's not exactly from the Bhagavatam. So the point is that we want someone to love us or to serve us. That's why we form these different relationships. But actually, Krishna forms His relationship with us just because He loves us and He doesn't need anything from us, which is a wonderful thought to have. So, any questions or comments? Other questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? Discussions, yeah.
You mentioned that Krishna enjoys things to the least angry sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if the devotees in this part, does he enjoy us being angry?
No, because it depends on what we're angry about. I mean, for example, yeah, there are certain things. There are certain things, like sometimes I hear the Ramayana. Or no, actually, it's a very esoteric thing, but I mean, sometimes I hear the Ramayana, and I hear how they send Sita Devi away, and I get angry with Lord Ram because of that. And sometimes I think about Krishna just leaving Vrindavan, I get angry with Krishna for that. But I guess it's a spiritual emotion. So how could you do that, Krishna? I mean, I understand philosophically why Krishna leaves Vrindavan, to increase the mood and intensity of Ipipalamba Seva. I understand all that. You know, I've been studying the philosophy long enough. But still, you know, you can experience certain things. But of course, if you get angry with Krishna for not satisfying your senses, that I don't think is a spiritual mood. But as we read the book, so we can feel a certain amount of emotions, obviously. And some of them may be anger. As in the case of, why did you neglect the gopis, Krishna? You know, why did you associate with Chandravali? It's like, there's that story, was it I think it was either Rupa or Sanatana Goswami. I think it was Sanatana Goswami. Someone can correct me if I got the name wrong. Where he was sitting and chanting his japa, I believe it is at the Chakaleshwara temple, Sanatana Goswami's bhajan kutir in Manasiganga. And some young boy brought him some milk. You know the story? He brought him some milk. He said, where's this milk come from? And the boy said, he's come from Saki Stali. Was that Sanatana Goswami? I think it was Sanatana. I think it was Sanatana Goswami. Yeah, because Sanatana Goswami was chanting in the Manasiganga area. And then as soon as he heard those words, Saki Stali, because that's the place of Chandravali, he got angry and started chasing the boy with a stick. I'm not saying we should imitate that. I'm not saying, you know, that we should have that same mood. However, you know, there's certain times you can get a little angry. And as long as it's not based upon personal, selfish considerations. I mean, I just admit, you know, I sometimes get angry with Krishna for leaving Vrindavan or for making Radharani angry. But that's, anyway. So, does that answer the question? But generally we don't, you know, Krishna, why did you make me sick? You know, get angry with Krishna. We shouldn't do that, yeah.
But not just angry with Krishna, sometimes with the devotees.
Oh, angry with the devotees. I think that that can lead us to be offensive towards the devotees. Now, it's interesting, you can manifest anger sometimes to train someone up, but you shouldn't be angry with them. Because to be angry means basically you're hating someone. There's a difference between being angry and acting angry. Just for example, I gave the devotees an example the other night, or last night actually, that I was at a temple board meeting somewhere, some country that should remain nameless. And the devotees, I mean, I made some point, you know, I'd like something to happen in the temple, and the devotees say, why are you complaining? You know, and I'm the GBC of that particular location. And I got angry. I had planned it out beforehand that I was going to get angry or manifest anger, and it worked. I got across my point. So Prabhupada sometimes would get angry at the devotees when they did something to train them up, but he was never hating them. Anger can be used sometimes, but not. It shouldn't be accompanied by hating the person. It should be like Narada Muni advises the disciple the snake to make believe that you're angry. You know, because the snake became a devotee. I don't know how he chanted japa, but somehow or other he became a devotee because he didn't have hands. So he became a devotee and he was complaining of people harassing him, you know, throwing stones at him because he'd become a peaceful snake. And Narada Muni said, just make believe, you know, whatever, that you're going to attack them and they'll leave you alone. So I think anger can be utilized sometimes, but if we are angry, like say, in our hearts as a devotee, that is not good. I wouldn't say that that's good at all. That we shouldn't be controlled by anger. Vacho vego manasa krodha vego. Anytime we're controlled by anger, it pollutes the consciousness. You can use anger in Krishna's service, but to be controlled by anger is not good for those who are attempting to be Krishna conscious. Does that answer the question? It's a fine line. But, you know, obviously you get angry at your children sometimes if they do something that's harmful to them. You know, and to save their lives. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you start to hate your children, that's a bad thing. So, Ajata Shatrava Shanta Sadhava Sadhabhushana, as described by Lord Kapiladeva, we shouldn't hate anyone or consider anyone to be our enemy. So, I think we have to end class, right? It's time for prasadam. Too long class. Anyway, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, Hari Hari Bol. Wow. 10 people watching. You only had one person watching your channel.
You're in my
Yeah, I had 10 people watching. Well, no, what it is the people aren't notified. The reason I have 10 people watching is because I send